WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Peter Clowney, sitting in for Terry Gross.
Do you feel that in collaboration with David, that you are afforded the opportunity to express yourself musically the way you would like to?
Well, I think I do, you know, in my solos. Yeah. My solos are my trademark.
That's Christopher Guest as lead guitarist Nigel Tufnell in Rob Reiner's 1984 mock rockumentary, This is Spinal Tap. Guest has a gift for inventing hilarious and utterly believable characters. When Guest co-wrote the 1996 film Waiting for Guffman, he gave himself the part of Corky St. Clair, a flamboyant producer banned from New York after his live-action version of the Fireman movie Backdraft burnt the venue to the ground. For 2000's Best in Show, Guest created Harlan Pepper, a backcountry hound dog lover who's convinced his pet has what it takes to win the Mayflower Kennel Club dog show.
My father was a coonhound man. He had red bones. And his brother had a blue tick, and his brother had a plot hound, and some other members of the family, some various cousins, they have a Stephen Stock, some other kind of Cataluna hounds. And my brother Otto also had a red bone. We used to fight all the time. He used to say, I'm a red bone man. I used to say, I'm a bloodhound man. The bloodhound of all the breeds is just such a noble, loyal, perfect dog. I mean, you can't find a better dog on the whole planet Earth. And I would guess that even if one day they land on some other planet in Venus or Mars, whatever, you couldn't find a better dog. And Hubert is the best hound I've ever had. I've had probably 10 or 15. He is not only a great show dog, but he could be a great man-trailing dog. If the police ever came and said, I need a great bloodhound, he would be the one to take out. Because if there was some kind of convict loose, you know, God forbid, he'd be the one to find them.
Christopher Guest spoke on stage earlier this summer during the New Yorker Festival. He was interviewed by Susan Orlean, a staff writer for The New Yorker and author of The Bullfighter Checks Her Makeup, My Encounters with Ordinary People, a collection of stories which was released this year. She asked Christopher Guest about the world of competitive dog shows.
The real world is way, way stranger than what we depicted. Mm-hmm. And I thought that if we had... some of the stories I heard were, if you'd seen them in a film, you would have said, this is ridiculous, this goes just too far. There were stories about people at the larger competitions sabotaging the other dogs. It is a frequent thing that happens where people will go around with scissors into the grooming area and while no one's looking, just clip off a piece of, you know, enough hair so that it's basically the dog can't win. And it's really cutthroat. It's very, very serious. And there are other more personal stories I heard that are scary. I try to find a balance between the reality that I observe, and then obviously it has to be funny. But you're right that if there's no affection for these people, and they may not be the most intelligent or talented people, but if you don't have affection for them, then there really is no point in doing the movie, because it's, I think after 5 or 10 minutes you'd be bored with that slant, you know.
Do you ever find when you're editing a film that there are places where it's gone too far?
No. I don't, because that's in the hands of the actors. Mm-hmm. And to preface this by explaining how the films are done, and it's not we don't do these in a conventional way. I write typically with Eugene Levy for 6 months, come up with a story which then becomes an outline which may be 15 or 20 pages. Mm-hmm. That is broken down into perhaps 75 scenes. Where we know exactly what happens in every scene, and there's a beginning and a middle and end, and then I talk to the actors, but there's no dialogue written down of any kind, and there's no rehearsal. So when we shoot, that's, you're seeing many times the first time what these people are saying. And the actors have to be the best at this talent. Really, that there can be, because this is you're out on a limb. It's really akin to playing jazz, where there's a song has been written. You know what key you're playing in. You listen to the changes, and you follow, and then you know not to take a solo when someone else is playing. You lay back, and these are
where the story has.
Everyone knows the story. They know the backstory. They know the point of every scene. They know who they are. There's no contradiction in who, in terms of relationships, in terms of facts. So they're not contradicting each other. And the camera turns on.
It's amazing.
And then you run out of film, and the camera turns off, and you reload, and you keep going. I didn't mean that facetiously, because in most cases a scene is written, and it may be typically 2 minutes or so, and you shoot the scene, and then you break for sometimes an hour or two, and you relight. This is, I have a headset when I'm not in a scene, and I'm talking to the cameraman, and I'm directing it as if it's a live show, where I'm telling him to move in and out, and then we may do it twice, sometimes at the most maybe three times, and then we move on to the next scene. Again, it's the backbone of this is a story that has to be very well understood, but it's given over to the performers, and they're exceptionally good at this. It's a very difficult thing, because it's not improv in the sense of going out to a comedy club improv, where the intention is basically to make you laugh. Mm-hmm. And this is slightly more dimensional, because it has to feel real, because it's in the format of a documentary.
What part of the process do you enjoy the most?
I like this. This is my favorite part. I do like it all, I have to say. I like it all. I like editing a lot. And in a film like this last one, and in Waiting for Guffman, we had 60 hours of film. And that gets cut down to sometimes under 90 minutes. And that takes close to a year. 10 hours a day. There is no, in a conventional film, there's a cut being put together by the editor while you're shooting. So when you finish shooting, you basically have a film that the director looks at and then starts to work with for.
So you this, just shot, the, shot.
I shoot, I can't even see all the dailies, because there's sometimes 3 hours of dailies, and until we've actually finished. And then I will sit down and see things for the first time and spend probably 2 months looking at the footage. And then getting into it.
Now, was Spinal Tap shot the
same way? Same way, yeah.
Where? How did you sort of concoct this way of making a movie? It seems very
well. Rob Reiner
unusual.
Directed that film. It was his first film. That came together in a somewhat different way. I had been playing in a band with Michael McKean since 67, 68. We started writing songs together and playing. And I've played music for a long time, and one of my old
what
music
was the band
old, one of my old partners is here, David Nickturn, who I've played a lot of music with. And we had a million names for bad names. That was the era of where anything that had a surreal kind of connotation was good. That was that strawberry alarm clock fudge thing, whatever.
Come on.
Well, our band was called Voltaire's Nose. Which, And when you're 19, that's funny. In 1968. We actually played the Village Vanguard for a George McGovern fundraiser, and we were introduced by Woody Allen. And that was about the high point of that. So Michael McKean and I had been playing music, and I had come up with this character, which eventually turned out to be the Nigel character, probably in the 70s. And that kind of somehow worked itself into. Then I was at the Chateau Marmont, a hotel in Los Angeles, and an English band was checking in. And I happened to be sitting in the lobby with a friend. And these guys walked in, and they were as close to the prototype of what this was to be. I don't know who they were, actually. It doesn't matter. But they walked in, and they were checking in, and the manager said to the one of these guys, and they had really long hair, it was a heavy metal band, he said, where's your bass? And the guy's, my what? He says, where's your bass? He says, I don't know, I think I left it at the airport. says, you left your bass at the end. I don't know. This went on for 20 minutes. You left your bass at the airport? I don't know, maybe. And I was very glad to be there for that. And I have this, I guess, this affection for whatever that is. I don't know. I don't know what that is, but it's interesting to me. Anyway, this gave me the courage to kind of get towards wherever we ended up. And we wrote some songs. Harry Shearer, Michael McKean, and I wrote the music, and Rob helped with some of the lyrics. And we just said, this style seemed to be a good way to do it. I don't know. It wasn't that well thought out. It was just a small movie. We didn't know it was going to still be around in a way, I guess. So.
And then you continued playing for a while Spinal Tap?
We continue to play. In fact, we're playing Carnegie Hall in about 3 weeks. We're doing a show here.
Are
doing it.
Serious?
I'm totally serious. Why would I? What a sad lie that would be. We thought there was going to be an actor and writer strike, so about months ago, we set some time aside to do a tour, and so we're doing L.A., we're playing the Greek Theater, we're playing in San Francisco, we're playing Carnegie Hall, Vegas, some other places. So, yeah.
Of the characters you've created, do you have a particular favorite? I know you've talked about how you begin with a voice often.
Well, that's the musical part of it. I think there are times where, in the last film, in Best in Show, I heard this voice that I'd been. I mean, I don't mean the Joan of Arc kind of way. I mean, I just came up with this voice. I've been doing this, I guess, since I was a kid. And if I hear that instrument, if that instrument is something I can play, then that I feel confident that I can do that. You know, it's like picking up a guitar and you just know, is this something you want to play? A great guitar, you don't want to put it down. Well, this voice, I would talk to myself. I'd drive around talking in this voice. And after a while, I thought, I think I can make this happen, you know. It doesn't always happen that way.
Mm-hmm. When you were working with the dogs in Bess and Cho, what was that like? Was that a...
Well, it was. First of all, if you've seen the film, it's about professional dog shows, essentially. And that world is very different than the pet world of... my dogs are just dogs. There's an intelligence test, not that this necessarily means that for show dogs, but there's an intelligence test that I read about, one of many steps in this test, where you take a dish towel and you put it on the dog's head, and you see how long it takes for the dog to say, I don't want this on my head. Well, not say verbally, obviously, but although that would be
that
a
would
smart
be
dog. And so I thought, I thought, this would be interesting. I have a dog, Henry. I said, Henry, come here. Henry, come here. Okay. Second time he comes up. Thing on his head, he sat there. Good 5 minutes. And then he just started walking around with it on his head. Completely true, by the way. Completely true. And he just didn't mind, you know. And then I have another dog. I put it on this dog, Lucy, we have, and she flipped it off. And I thought, well, but what does that mean? I mean, he didn't mind that it was on his head, and she did. So this is a slightly diverse one. Anyway, the dog world, in working with these real dogs, I had to cast champion dogs because they had to look like the dogs that are in shows as opposed to Hollywood trick dogs or pet dogs, obviously. So we shot this in Canada, and so there were Canadian champion dogs. I had to audition dogs, so people brought their champion dogs in, and that became, it was like parents bringing in their kids, and then me saying that I didn't want their kid. Their faces would fall. And I felt horrible. I thought, oh, my, I can't do this. And it was not easy. And some of the people took it very personally and were very angry. And even to take it a step farther, in the most surreal thing that happened was during the shooting, I said to this woman, so your dog's gonna come in second, you're third. She said, second? Are you crazy? This dog doesn't come in second. It's a champ. I said, no, this is a movie. This is a movie. You see, you're not an actor in the movie. You have a dog. This is the dog guys. And she didn't get it. I said, you can't come in first because you're not in the movie. You're not an actor in this. This is a movie. This is pretend. And for the next week, I see her brushing this dog and. Okay, so that was the world I was in.
Christopher Guest speaking with Susan Orlean earlier this summer at the New Yorker Festival. Since they spoke, Spinal Tap has wrapped up their summer tour. Their Carnegie Hall show was a sellout. The audience was treated to rousing versions of Break Like the Wind and Sex Farm and a Big Bottom finale. This is Fresh Air.